When it comes to hard work, there's one important rule. Pick the right tool for the right job. That's why Chevy offers a family of Silverado pickup trucks designed just for the job. Go to ChevyDriveChicago.com and put a Silverado in your toolbox.
What is Jeff Bezos of Amazon going to get for Christmas and Thanksgiving? How about a big city like New York and another city like Northern Virginia, a group of suburbs, the richest suburbs in the country, and he can continue his empire. Yeah, that's a good Thanksgiving thought. And Jim Acosta, if I were a lyricist, I would write a poem, like a song, based on the Going Courtin' song in Seven Brides and Seven Brothers. Going Courtin'. But it would be Jim Acosta, because you're our hero, man. He is our hero. Jeff Carlin is in the studio. Jeff Carlin, the co-host of this podcast and producer, executive producer of the Rokan Show with Anna DeVellantis. And I'm John Cass. Later, we're going to have Tom Bevin of Real Clear Politics coming on to talk about the media and Mr. Jim Acosta. And you know where you are. You're on that boulevard, that lonely street that Johnny Rocco knows, that Mike Madigan knows, that everyone knows. It's called the Chicago Way on WGN Plus.
In a tower by the river, there lived a man.
Castle.
There was a man who took a stand with pen and paper in his hand, defeating foes in every ward with a pen more mighty than the sword. No escape from his ink lasso in a tower by the river. Castle.
Here's how you get him. He pulls a knife, you pull a gun. He sends one of yours to the hospital, you send one of his to the morgue. That's the Chicago Way.
Jeff, thanks for the letting me stumble through that.
I'll clean it up.
That introduction. But before we get to Tom Bevin and Real Clear Politics, I've got a public service announcement. May I make it?
Oh, of course.
Mr. Thanksgiving Advice Man gives advice for Thanksgiving. And we're going to do a special podcast, Thanksgiving podcast. Find me on Facebook. It'll be under Mr. Thanksgiving Advice Man. Ask your Thanksgiving questions. You know, how to talk about politics with your drunken 22-year-old niece from a liberal college, and how to not have her scream and hate you, or vice versa, and what to do about Jell-O and so forth, and should you have brined or not. Mr. Thanksgiving Advice Man. And the other thing I want to say, public service, is that this podcast, the Chicago Way podcast, podcasting behind the iron blue curtain of Illinois, a lonely conservative on a sea sugar cookie in a sea of liberal milk, is growing by leaps and bounds.
But we need your help.
We need your help.
Share the podcast. Tell your friends. To let people know that there are other voices in this city beyond the liberal pounding of everything happening. And share it, please, because we're trying to make this thing into something. John and I have been at this for now 150 episodes.
But it's just but now it's growing.
Yeah, now we're starting to catch fire, but we need help, and we would really appreciate, I guess John always says, a very nice review on iTunes. And if you could just share it, let your friends know. Let them know that there is another point of view in the city of Chicago and Illinois, and that we're here for you. We're here for you to give you something, even if you don't agree with us and you don't, it makes you angry, or you've got liberal friends, very liberal friends, who are going to get angry at us.
It's such a good thing to send to your liberal friends because maybe they're tired and they need to get excited. And once they listen to this, their blood pressure goes up and, they're ready for the day.
Exactly.
Right?
Exactly. We're here for them.
So thank you very much, and please, as Jeff said, please listen and share. The Chicago Way podcast is doing so well that I think it can even do better, actually, and only with your help, because behind the iron blue curtain, in this sea, in this blue liberal sea, you have to have some little voice bubbling out, and that's me, and I'm a conservative. Jeff is a moderate, and but still we like each other, don't we?
Yes.
And I got to ask you a question, Jeff.
Yep.
Not Mr. Thanksgiving Advice Man, Mr. Toy Advice Man. You have nephews and nieces.
I do.
Young ones. Would you get them the please, the Black Panther saber claw, claw slasher toy?
I saw this. This has been labeled the worst gift of the season, the most dangerous gift.
What's wrong with it?
Well, it's almost like the Wolverine claw, but it's apparently more dangerous, and the claws aren't retractable. Pointy objects for little kids, bad idea. Unless unless it's drumsticks or chopsticks, I think it's a bad idea.
Mr. Toy Expert had a column this week in the Chicago Tribune on page 2, and he basically said, yes, it's really dumb because people are saying the claws don't retract and when you want them to. But if you, Mr. Toy Expert said that once they stick into your 4-year-old's eye, when the 8-year-old, right, rakes his face, mm-hmm, they'll stick there and the eyeball will keep them extended. Don't you think?
Yeah. I don't think that's what we need.
Jeff, you're too young to remember this, but those of us who are old remember Six Finger. Don't you know about Six Finger?
No idea.
Six Finger, man alive, how did I ever get along with 5? This was a toy where it was like, I hate to say this, maybe I'll be called a hater. I don't want to be a race hater here, but it was a finger that was flesh colored. Remember flesh colored? It's not
sure.
That was flesh. It assumed that everybody had pink flesh.
Same flesh, right.
It was a finger, a plastic finger you put next to your hand, next to your index finger, and it looked exactly like a finger if your finger was made of pink plastic and was large. And it used to shoot, it was like a gun, and it would shoot bombs and projectiles, and you could shoot your little brother in the back of the head, and then he would scream.
A 1, a 2, a 3, 4, 5, a 6. 6! Surprise! It's Six Finger! It looks like your finger, but watch him flip. It's a secret weapon at your fingertip. Just point and fire. Six Finger sends an SOS missile to your friends.
Six Finger!
Fires cap-loaded bombs and they explode as a ballpoint pen and signals in code. Looks like a finger so no one can see who has Six Finger.
Me!
Shoots rockets that burst and bombs that explode and writes with a pen and signals in code, shoot message missiles and watch them go. And it looks like your finger, and how will they know?
Six finger!
Here's how to get it on the card right there. Less than $2 everywhere. Six finger, man alive.
How did I ever get along with 5?
I'll take lawn darts over that, I think.
Six finger, man alive. How did I ever get along with 5?
That's catchy. That's marketing for mm-hmm. you.
Yeah,
marketing convinces us to hurt ourselves.
One other thing, the Susana Mendoza train is obviously moving, and people are talking now. I'm reading about how young she is and how, she's young and different generation. But here's the thing. Mike Madigan is not young. He's like Mr. Burns, and he's running this thing. So if you talk about how young she is, don't you have to talk about how old he is? I don't know. Is that rude of me? I don't want to make this an anti-Susana Mendoza podcast because I like her, really.
Yeah.
But I just don't like getting herded, Jeff Carlin. I don't like getting herded.
Yes, I'm with you. You called me earlier more a moderate or in U.S.
Yes, I would
talk about party. And yeah, I follow the Washingtonian kind of purview that parties are the downfall of all of us. And a state
factions.
Yes. In a state like Illinois, where it's one party controlled from the tip of Wisconsin to the tip of Missouri, is dangerous. And it leaves everybody out in the cold unless you're carrying a blue card in your pocket. And I'm with you. I love Susanna. She's a very nice person. She's principled and she
fought off John Cordes Boyle when he looked
right.
like he was.
And she's a lot. I mean, she seems like a logical
three
person.
Three sheets to the wind, yeah.
Right. And she's personable. But like you said, the powers that control her or behind her, I don't know, control is probably not the word for it, but are behind her are the same powers that are behind Pritzker, that are the same powers that are behind Madigan, obviously. I mean, it's the same. These are the same power groups that have driven the SS Springfield into an iceberg.
The SS Illinois into
Right. We're at the helm. Yeah, exactly. And it's dangerous. It's absolutely dangerous. Right. And it's been dangerous for our 200 years. There goes your bicentennial nod. Which, did you hear that story too?
What?
So the state was pushing this big bicentennial. They're trying to drum up this big party about the state and be like, hey, you know, rah, rah.
Right, right.
200 years of us in the land of Lincoln. And they had this big party planned at the United Center. And they were hoping to have the whole state come out and an REO Speedwagon. And guess what? Nobody cares. And they have to move it to Navy Pier because they need a smaller venue and they can't fill out the United Center. And it's a slap in the face, really. I mean, I don't think they realize this. I don't think the powers that be realize this, that a state that is broke, a state that has people dying in nursing homes, a state that has people, you know, can't afford their homes and have to flee the state, and they're like, hey, let's celebrate it.
Yeah, no one wants to celebrate the taxes to come.
Taxes to come.
Not only an income tax increase, but a exit tax on your property if you sell your house. That's why people are selling all over now.
It's nuts.
You know,
my advice to them would have been, you know, have a coin stamped and try to sell it to those who want it and can afford it, and then call it a day.
And have William Devane sell it on cable news.
Exactly.
Right.
Exactly.
Precious metals with the, like, how many teeth does William Devane have in his head? He must have, I think, 64 teeth. He's like the John Elway of B movie actors. You know. Anyway. Yeah, I don't think a party is the right thing.
No.
You know, I think I'd rather us be like the who we are, ourselves. Like those peasants in Monty Python, the night movie, what was it called again? The night movie.
Oh, Monty Python and the Holy Grail?
Where they're in the mud on their knees making like mud, just digging mud with their hands. Because that's, you know, and talking about the collective, because that's what we are now. We are being slowly, whether it's Jeff Bezos getting property, getting tax credits in Washington and New York, or with the oligarchs here, we are, and then people screaming this and that about politics, and they don't even know what they're talking about. It's all happening before our eyes. That's why I'm glad we have Tom Bevin coming on and to enlighten us.
Everybody, thanks for coming. I just want to say something very briefly, and that is I want to thank all of my colleagues in the press who supported us this week, and I want to thank the judge for the decision he made today, and let's go back to work. Thank you.
We think it's real nice to have freedom of speech. Grateful for that right.
No complaints about liberty.
It's just sometimes exchanges online get me.
I'm at my key.
And now our guest is Tom Bevin, founder of Real Clear Politics, my favorite website besides the Chicago Tribune, of course. I go there first, then Real Clear, because Tom puts out opinion and stories from all perspectives, left and right. But I have to ask you, Tom, the other day I was on your podcast on WLS, the Tom Bevin Show. It's not a podcast, it's a show.
An actual show, yeah.
Actual show, and not like this. On WLS, and a man named Tom Bevin hoisted me on my own petard with respect to my defense of Jim Acosta. And now I would like to return the favor, my friend. By the way, thank you for lunch the other day, but...
yes, but what?
But Jim, is he our hero now?
He is now. Well, we know the judge ruled in favor of Jim Acosta, and told the White House to give him his hard pass back. So I guess he is our First Amendment, you know, crusading hero.
All right,
very fitting for our age that a guy who is just a complete ass, grandstanding, microphone hogging, you know, rude individual apparently has a First Amendment right to have a hard pass at the White House. Look, I generally, John, agree with your... Look, they turned this guy into a martyr. I mean, you had Fox News and everybody else filing friend of the court briefs for Jim Acosta. I mean, the proper course of action for the White House would have been for Trump to say to Acosta, sit down, you are being rude, and guess what? I'm never going to call on you again. Never. And if CNN wants to get a question from this White House, they're going to have to hire somebody else to do the job because I'm not talking to you because of the way you act. And that would have, I think, taken away Jim Acosta's power. He can whine all he wants about being iced out, but that would have been, you know, there's no freedom of the press issue there. But Trump can't do that because I think not even secretly, he thrives on the conflict. He called on Jim Acosta in that press conference, knowing exactly who he is, what he does, how he operates, and he still called on him. Why? Because he likes the confrontation. He likes the conflict.
He can use it. I mean, it works to his brand at 100%. And
yeah, but in typical Trumpian fashion, right? They follow this. You know, they strip his hard pass, overstep a little bit, and they get the lawsuit filed, and suddenly he becomes a First Amendment martyr, to John's point, which is giving him more credibility, more publicity, when in fact they should be doing. You would think that they would want to do. You know, they can still bash CNN for being fake news and all the rest, but as far as Jim Acosta is concerned, I would make him persona non grata. That's what I would have done.
Well, I listened to the great exchange between the two of them. I listened to it again and again. And I listened on audio, so I didn't have to see Jim Acosta brush the young woman's hand away, even though he lied about it and said, I never touched her, which he did. He touched her. He didn't manhandle her, but he touched her. He pushed her hand away. And I was struck by President Trump's demeanor before he went, you know, DEFCON 1 on it. He was pretty, he was engaging. He was talking to Jim Acosta. He was not screaming at him, but there were four or five questions. How many questions? When does it come? When does the time come where people in the room think, Jim Acosta, you're manipulating the time? When do other journalists?
Well, I mean, and we've seen reporting. Look, there are a lot of folks in that room who do. They don't appreciate Jim Acosta and his brand of journalism, and they think he is a grandstander and he's self-aggrandizing and all that. And privately, they will tell you that they don't like him or his style, but they don't do that publicly because they're kind of like NATO. You know, attack on one is attack on all. They've got to stand together.
Ed Henry and Brett Baer have both on WGN in recent weeks talking about this. And both of them said what you just said. I mean, that they defend his right to be in that room. They defend his right to be a part of the press corps. But they do not like the way he goes about business because it's a show. And you're absolutely right. I mean, it's the guy should have the press corps, you know, should have been like, hey, CNN, roll this guy in or the president's not going to talk to you. But like you said, the president can use it to almost as an advantage to put out his message of it's us versus them.
And he will, I think. But there's another question here besides the buffoon peacock that Jim Acosta is. And I agree with Tom on this. I've seen this for some reason. It happens to TV people more than print. Print people know that you're really not going to get any news at a news conference. You have to do something called reporting.
That's the first thing I learned from John Cass, working with John.
Yeah. But for TV, it's all about the performance. And that brings us to another thing, which is how is the media going to recover from what it's doing to itself, Tom Bevin?
Well, I mean, we've talked about this a lot over the course of the last few years, John. I don't know that they can. I don't know that there's any, putting that genie back in the bottle. In fact, there was a couple of studies that just came out in the last 7 to 10 days showing that the coverage of Trump has been incredibly negative, and that there is all sorts of, bias in the media, left-leaning bias, and I think that's fully ingrained and accepted by most news consumers out there, and it's driven people into their sort of partisan echo chambers even more. There is no central trust. Remember, CNN used to be the most trusted name in news,
yeah, well,
right?
Well, that's when Frank Sesno was at the White House.
Right.
And Frank Sesno would never, ever, ever act the way Acosta acts. He never would. It just right. would be impossible.
Right. And so you've got both sides are doing it, right? You've got these opinion programs on the left and the right. You've got Sean Hannity's on stage with Donald Trump at rallies. I mean, that's
I would have fired him immediately.
I mean, that's a little bit beyond the pale, and that was not well taken within Fox News because it obviously, reflects poorly on the folks like Brett Baer who are actual real journalists and doing real news work. In fact, and I'm not just saying this because I appear on his show regularly, but I honestly think Special Report is the best news program on television.
Absolutely.
But you've got Chris Cuomo, for example. He's anchoring their morning broadcast or whatever, and now he's doing a radio show. He's doing this primetime show. I mean, he's become basically an opinion guy. And of course, over on MSNBC, I mean, it's all opinion, across the board. So it's the reality we live in. I don't think it's going to change. I don't think there's any going back. And so it's up to, I do think though, there is an opportunity for someone, and Carl Cannon, our Washington bureau chief, and I talk about this all the time, for a news organization that can report on sort of facts and in a sort of straight, unbiased way. They don't have, they're not treating Trump like they don't have massive Trump derangement syndrome. And on the other hand, they're not, slobbering over his every move as if he's doing the greatest thing ever.
Right.
Just straight factual reporting, because honestly, you go look at the front page of the New York Times, you go look at the front page of the Washington Post. It is astonishing how negative the coverage is of this guy and how shallow it is. I mean, it's constantly, Trump tweeted this, Trump tweeted that. Meanwhile, the media has just degenerated to the point where it is all about the latest outrage of the day, and that's the sort of our culture now with Twitter and Facebook and all that stuff.
Like the guy shouting "Heil Hitler, Heil Trump," and then they all run with it. Oh, this is Trump's America, and then it turns out the guy's a Democrat.
Yeah, I mean all that stuff.
But that part is left out. So people listening to this podcast and people who read me and others, they say, what has gone wrong with the media where you can trumpet, the Heil Hitler, Heil Trump fellow at the Fiddler on the Roof screaming it, scaring the hell out of people because of the Philadelphia massacre just a few weeks ago, and then not mention that he's a Trump guy, a Democrat, liberal Trump hater when you find out about it. It's sort of like, let's just move on. Oh, just forget it. And
it builds
resentment with people.
Totally builds resentment. And it also builds, there's already the trust in the media is already so low and I think irreparably damaged that it just reinforces the idea that, you talk to folks who are Trump supporters or Republicans. I mean, they've given up on the idea that Republicans can get sort of a fair shake in the media. I mean, this election recount coverage is precisely is a perfect example.
Let's hear
right?
it.
You've got recounts going on in Florida where Democrats are saying, their Republicans are saying without evidence, baseless claims of shenanigans and all of this stuff.
Right.
When there clearly is evidence that the folks in Broward County and Palm Beach County violated the law.
Weren't inept.
Well, I mean, setting aside the incompetence argument. I mean, just the idea that they didn't
report on time.
They didn't report on time. There was no transparency. Now you have this claim in Naples County that folks who were Democratic officials were urging people to submit votes after the deadline. I mean, just there's plenty of evidence that. This stuff was not fully above board, and then we had the recount, and they filed the claim, filed the numbers 2 minutes late, so the pickups for Rick Scott wouldn't count, and they go back to the original count. I mean, it's just all craziness,
right? But as far as I understand, many leading journalists, Twitter is the bane of journalism, but they go on Twitter, and they say there is no evidence. There's no evidence of of Democrats buying votes for Jell-O with seniors at the Publix. I mean, there's no evidence.
But right.
That's the point is not commission, it's omission. That's how
well, and I tweeted this the other day too. I mean, there was so much praise heaped on Martha McSally for her graceful concession to Kyrsten Sinema in the Arizona Senate race, right?
Right.
I mean, Morning Joe, Mika, and Joe were sort of slobbering over McSally. Right. I mean, Democrats and the media. This is we need more of this. This is great. This is great. Meanwhile, in Georgia, you have Stacey Abrams who is behind by roughly the same percentage, about a point and a half. And is notably not conceding and was filing lawsuits. And then just as of yesterday, is now filing a lawsuit calling for an entire revote, not just a recount, but a revote in the entire state. And she's being praised as like this fighter. She's fighting to make sure that all the votes are counted. I mean, it's kind of like, you know, I think folks look at that and say, like, well, there's a bit of a double standard here, right? I mean, when's Stacey Abrams going to sit on the couch with her dog and make a graceful concession to Brian Kemp? Instead, you've got Sherrod Brown and Hillary Clinton running around saying, well, if she doesn't win this race, it was clearly stolen by Republicans. And
racism.
Racism and voter
evidence.
Suppression and all this stuff. I mean, it's just like,
correct.
It's
well, we can separate, I think, the political rhetoric from the media approving it or joining in, and that's where you come in, sir, as chairman of Real Clear Politics, as boss of it. Does this country, I think the country needs reasonable and thoughtful media criticism to break into that, to break that up and to assess it on both sides, on the slobbering Sean Hannity side with the same three revolving guests and the others too on the left. I think that we need real good media criticism in this country, and we don't have it. All we get is lefty talking points from, you know, the usual sources.
Yeah, I mean, look, it's.
Can you get that? Can you please order that up for me?
So yeah, I
can read
we'll it. Do our best. I mean, look, that's one of the things we try and do, obviously, is at Real Clear Politics every single day is cut through some of the nonsense and double standards and bias and all of this stuff. And look, we'll present part of that we do through opinion, right? We'll present the best arguments of the left and the best arguments of the right. Correct. They're clearly opinion pieces. You read them, you decide. If you think E.J. Dionne is right, that Republicans are tiptoeing toward autocracy because of the vote in Florida, right. You know, fine. That's you know, you agree with him. You agree with his opinion. Right. But we right next to him, we've got an article, you know, from Mark Thiessen in the Washington Post saying that, you know, hey, Democrats are down there trying to steal an election in Florida, and you read both those pieces, and you can come to your own conclusions about who you agree with. But on the news side also, to try and provide some clarity to the, you know, the news stories that are out there, and again, we're able to use all the sources that are available to us, left, right, center, you know, across the board, and to try and give our readers the what we feel is the best possible sort of interpretation of the news. And so we've got stories on the left column of Real Clear Politics and on the video page, video clips, et cetera, trying to bring some clarity to because there's a lot of misinformation out there. There's a lot of spin and framing that goes on that is all designed to influence opinion, influence, you know, perceptions, and you know, we're trying to, I think, break through some of that and provide some clarity and reality to it. And sometimes we're obviously more successful than others.
And I've thrown this up before, and John's kind of poo-pooed it because this is I understand, but I push for something like a UL, like a Underwriters Labs kind of mentality for journalists. I feel like,
I mean, from the government.
No. That's like the UL is not a government group. I mean, they're a private organization, but groups that can accredit people and say, hey, these are actual journalists. These aren't people who are going to go out there and who they don't have ties. They protect their ability to be center mass and say, hey, this is what we're reporting. This is what it is. And then there's the opinion piece of it. I mean, you see it in like children's programming. And I hate to make that analogy, but it's like you see in children's programming definable content versus ads. So parents know that when their children are being taught something versus when they're being pitched something. And our populace is so dense to the understanding of what's opinion versus what is actual reporting. And I know actual reporting is now become this gray area because many reporters have their opinion bleed into what they report and what they choose not to and to report and what they choose to report. But I feel like, you know, Real Clear Politics is trying to move, it's kind of taking that role, obviously, by defining this is opinion, this is what we realize is real reporting, you know, make your own opinion. But I feel like there should be a push that people can come together and be like, hey, we need somebody to tell the people who aren't informed or people don't understand, because I can't tell you how often I get phone calls at the radio station during live programming, and they're like, you guys have it all wrong. You're missing the story about some crazy conspiracy theory. And that those people calling say, that's absolutely true. It's happening. It's happening. You're not reporting it. And it's not true. And it goes.
You mean there's an invasion?
Well, what?
As opposed to a caravan, even though the caravanners are climbing over the wall right now?
Well, but right? Exactly.
Yeah, but I mean, the problem with that is, you know, who are the deciders? I mean, who's going to do that? You know, you've got Stephen Brill, who has got a new company called NewsGuard, and that's basically what they're trying to do. But we've had this proliferation of the quote unquote, you know, fact checkers. These are the, you know, ostensibly the arbiters of truth. And then you find out that the fact checkers, though, they all come from a certain perspective. And more often than not, like many, many journalists around the country, they come from, you know, a left-leaning perspective. They come from J schools around the country, and they're all approaching. And we have a thing on our site which fact-checks the fact-checkers.
Yeah, I love it.
Yeah, to try and, you know, again, bring a little bit of balance and reality to the fact that, because if you didn't know better, if you were just a casual news consumer, you know you would look at Glenn Kessler and the Washington Post fact checker and you would think, oh, okay, well, this seems reasonable that he's given this claim
Pinocchio's,
you know, for Pinocchio's, right. But when in fact it probably deserves one Pinocchio or no Pinocchios or whatever, I mean, depending on your perspective and how which facts you choose to use and how you choose to spin those facts or frame those facts. And so, you know, we don't do that. We're trying to provide information to people, be sort of a clearinghouse, let them, you know, consume news, opinion, political news, political opinion, and hopefully leave the site better informed than when they came there, and you know, make decisions about what they think, what they believe based on the content that we're providing. And again, but it's tough. I mean, it is. We live in the most complex information age in the history of humankind. I mean, just think about it right now, and it's getting more complex by the day.
And as it
and there's more opportunities for people to consume information, but at the same time, there's more opportunity for folks to promote conspiracy theories and, you know, fake news.
Agendas. And,
yeah, exactly.
But through
all sorts of subversive, you know, ways. I mean, we've seen this expose on Facebook and the New York Times and how Facebook has just, you know, was promoted as doing all this great social good. They were connecting the world, and they were, you know, all these, like, it was, you know, cotton candy and rainbows, Facebook. And now suddenly, you know, we've seen the dark side, which is Facebook is being manipulated and used, aside from the privacy issues, which is a whole other thing, but by, you know, foreign actors and, you know, white supremacists and black nationalists, you name it. I mean, everybody's using Facebook to try and confuse and distort
and hurt
how does your average person find their way through all this stuff.
Yeah, and it's funny,
really, really hard.
It's amazing, and then, you know, it's the idea that Facebook was, you know, obviously Zuckerberg started it as a platform to check out girls. I mean, he's admitted that, you know, that was the kind of thing because he was too nervous to go out and meet girls, and we'll pair people together. Yeah, which I get, and then it was like this utopian idea. And it was instantly subverted because they didn't protect themselves. They had blinders on to the idea that the world is easy and perfect. And then they wanted to make money off of it, which is always the downfall of that stuff. And it's so sad because my own family members, I mean, send me stuff and they're like, I saw this on Facebook. How can you not, you know, how can you not believe this? I'm like, well, because I look at facts and I look at, you know, the truth and I look at sources. But people don't
I've had Facebook people, readers of mine, tell me that my column is referred to by Facebook as spam often. They're like spam alerts because John Cass has an opinion, so I guess this I'm selling spam or something.
Spam, wonderful spam,
I would like to switch gears, Tom Bevan, if I may, because on this podcast, the Chicago Way podcast with Jeff Carlin and John Cass, a number of months ago, a man named Tom Bevan came on and said something, and I referred to it in the last podcast that I did. And this was, you know, this Michelle Obama rollout where it's like all Michelle love. 24/7. We love Michelle. We love you, Michelle, and Oprah, and everything, and it's going crazy. And I said on the last edition of this program that I remember Tom Bevan saying, "What about Michelle Obama running for president? Are we seeing the beginnings of a Michelle Obama?"
You know, I doubt it.
Come on! You ruined everything by just saying that.
I ruined the setup. Listen, I think Michelle Obama could, I mean, if she were to announce, it would clear the field. I mean, I think she would be the runaway nominee. I think she would, she might even beat Donald Trump. I mean, I think she's that.
Obama Biden?
No, Obama.
Yeah, right?
Obama.
Obama Biden.
Because Barack could be our Secretary of State.
But he can't be on the ticket.
He could be.
But Obama Biden, I mean, that would be an unstoppable force.
Look, it is a very tantalizing, if you're looking for a great, you know, sort of storyline and narrative, that Michelle Obama avenges her husband's legacy. She avenges Hillary Clinton, becomes the first woman president. You know, it's all there.
And you started it, my friend.
I know
you're
I did.
Responsible for it.
But she has said repeatedly, and I have no reason, you know, doubt. She said repeatedly that she's not interested, she'd never do it, all that stuff, and I have no reason to believe that she's not telling the truth. Now, could she change her mind? Yes. Could she be pressured into it? Maybe. But, I mean, I doubt it, and it doesn't seem like Oprah's going to do it either. I mean, I think we're going to be in for a treat in the sense that there do appear to be 75 Democrats that are interested in running for president, and maybe half of those will end up getting in, and that's going to be fun. But I don't think it's going to be I think it's going to be a bit of a circus and a freak show in the sense that, you know, you're going to have all these folks competing for the adoration of the progressives and the left wing base, which is where all the energy is. I mean, you saw Kamala Harris yesterday asking the person who they're confirming to be the head of ICE that, you know, comparing ICE to the KKK.
That's just so perfect.
Yeah, and it's kind of like you can expect a lot. You know, ICE has already been called. You know, I think Cynthia Nixon compared them to terrorists and others. So, I mean, you're going to continue to see an escalation in that kind of rhetoric, that kind of language, and I think it's going to be a real knockdown, drag-out affair in 2020. It's so wide open on the Democratic side, but I don't think, as much as I would love for Michelle Obama to run, because then we could go back and play. Because I said it the day after 2016. I could go back. I would be like, you know, Costradamus or whatever.
Right. Oh, yeah.
But I just don't think it's going to happen.
Yeah, well, I'll tell you one thing that will happen. And if it happens, I will write a good column and hope that Tom Bevan links it on his website. And that would be when we, if she doesn't run, if Michelle doesn't run and fulfill my wildest dreams and fantasies and hopes, we will have a confrontation ultimately between Kamala Harris and Senator Spartacus. What's his name? Cory Booker.
Cory Booker.
Oh, yeah.
And and in that confrontation, she is going to drop the T-bone thing on him.
She's going to drop the what?
The T-bone.
Oh, yeah. Right.
Where's T-bone? Remember T-bone, the fictional character
yes.
you thought up? She's
yes.
going to, I think she's going to, she's going to have to take him out as this thing moves forward. I can just see her doing it. I'm just saying.
Yeah, well, you know what? It might not be Cory Booker. It might be Deval Patrick, who's yeah. you know, David Axelrod is quietly plotting Deval Patrick's return to the national stage, and you know, he's going to reemerge and be seen as a fresh new face again.
That's how they do it,
right? And so
we have a fresh new face in Chicago, and her name's Susana Mendoza. I'm reading, and here's one of the things. You know, we're talking about journalism. I'm reading that. She's a fresh new face, and she's young, and others are old. And I'm thinking, well, her boss, the guy who's running her, is like 80 years old, Mike Madigan. He runs her. But no mention of Mike. And the question in journalism is always, if politicians can get journalists to parrot their argument without bringing in the, squeamish, bothersome details like, she might be young, but Mike Madigan's old, you have a victory. And therefore, we need good media criticism, Tom Bevan.
Or just good original reporting to start with. And then you wouldn't need criticism of the media because they, you know.
Because we're beyond criticism. We're like demigods. we shouldn't even be criticized. Tom Bevan of Real Clear Politics, thanks for being here. And, have a great Thanksgiving, Tom.
Same to you, John. Always great family. To be with you. You bet. Jeff, thanks,
buddy. Going courting, oh, it sets your senses in a whirl. Going courting, dudin' up to go and see a girl. Oh, it's fun to hunt and shoot a gun, or to catch a rabbit on the run. But you'll find it's twice as sporting, going courting. Please, again, remember... before Jeff Carlin comes back on the microphone, remember that. Go find me on Facebook. Mr. Thanksgiving Advice Man will answer your questions.
Yes, yes. Questions and food related, by all means, we've got one more podcast in us before the holiday, and we won't be doing one after the holiday. So, but give us your questions. You know where to find John and myself on Facebook. We'll do what we can. If you've got any pie questions, I'm more than happy to answer those. And now that Christine, my other half, is on the gluten-free, dairy-free diet, I'm putting together a gluten-free, dairy-free Thanksgiving. So if you have any advice and you're in that's your sphere as well, please, I'm happy to take any advice. If you've got any tricks or tips for that, please pass them along. But we will catch everybody next week. For our Thanksgiving, and then we'll be off for the holiday, but we'll catch you again the following week. And of course, check us out on iTunes, Google Play, sell your friends, share. We're hoping to become
the fastest growing conservative podcast in the Midwest,
behind the Iron Blue Curtain. This is the Chicago Way on WGN Plus. Be well, thanks, John.